Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rose Gamblin and Paul Tooley.
Thank you so much for joining our show. And today we're going to talk with Elder Bradley Galambos. And I'm holding in my hand your book, A Harmony of the Gospels. 875 pages of a life's work here. And I just want to read your bio, and then I have so many questions I want to ask. Elder Galambos has been pastor for more than 40 years with a broad experience in Bible study, preaching, and the good news of the gospel. He and his wife Janice have worked and ministered in such places as Miami, Florida, Anchorage, Alaska. Elder Galambos believes that the story of Jesus needs to be told in such a way that will excite those who have heard this story many times or who are hearing it for the first time. The gospel story is still the greatest story ever told, Elder Galambos remarks. It is just as relevant for today's world as it was when it first took place 2,000 years ago. I know that in preparing this book, my life has been changed. It is hoped that this book will be a source of inspiration to everyone who reads it. It is the story of the Messiah's gospel, explained and told in the language of our times. Welcome, welcome, Bradley Galambos, and your great work here. For our listeners, explain what a harmony is.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. A harmony is where you take, in the case of the Gospels, you take the four versions of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and you put them all together as one record. So it's like a fifth version of the Bible. However, what I've produced here is much more than a simple harmony. There are lots of harmonies that have been done over the years. But when I put this together, I wanted to put it in modern language. So the entire text is paraphrased. There's also a timeline. Everything in the gospel record is on a timeline, so you know exactly how it relates to the overall ministry of Jesus. Also, I wanted to put together the harmony in such a way that it would serve as a commentary. And yet I didn't want to lose the thought of a biography. And so I embed a lot of comments throughout the book to explain exactly what Jesus is saying or what Jesus is doing or what is happening in a particular case. So in that case, it's an expanded paraphrase. In addition to that, there were times where I had to add extra paragraphs to explain things, and there are about 700 of those in the book. And so putting them all together, it still reads like a biography. On the other hand, I wanted to be very careful that I didn't moralize. I don't preach in the book. I give the gospel record what I think it was saying and let every individual decide what to do about it. It's not like a regular sermon at all.
No, it's a very extensive volume. I counted about 875 pages of information. How long did it take you to write something like this?
Overall, it was 8 years. And I would say the first 6 years, I worked on it virtually every day. I couldn't begin to tell you how many times I've read that thing over and over and over and over again. And went back and researched and added things, subtracted things, edited things. The last couple of years, it was sort of hit and miss. But let's say it was an overall 8-year project, 6 of which was concentrated.
Now, as you went through this journey, every author knows that they come out the other side of a project changed. What changed for you, or how did your outlook on Jesus change?
There's a section in the book where I list some of these things, but let me just give you a few. First of all, I was surprised, even shocked, how tough Jesus was with his enemy. We sometimes picture Jesus only during that 15 hours where he suffered as the Lamb of God, giving himself for the sins of the world. And we get the impression that's the way he was during his entire ministry. Not so.
Well,
not so.
Okay,
for one example, Jesus is in a Pharisee's house, and he's really reaming the Pharisees out for their faults and shortcomings, one right after another. And there's a lawyer there. Now, a lawyer was someone who was a scribe who wrote the texts of the Bible. So he sort of interrupted Jesus, and he said, well, while I'm a lawyer and not a Pharisee, technically, I am also a Pharisee part-time. So when you're criticizing the Pharisees, you're in effect criticizing me. And then Jesus said, so you're a lawyer? And he said, yes. He said, then he started criticizing the lawyers. It's just amazing. He didn't back down at all. And it's only to his enemies. I don't want to give the impression he was this way to everybody. But to those that were absolutely determined to destroy his ministry, he would not let them do it. And it's really a powerful testimony to his, what I call his toughness. In addition to that, I was surprised in the book, when I put it together, the fact that Jesus truly believed that he was the Messiah and was not afraid to detail that. Nowhere in the gospel record does Jesus say, I'm the Messiah. And yet 1,000 times in 1,000 different ways, he makes it clear that he was indeed the Messiah. And I was just terribly impressed with that. And one more, real quickly. Jesus was organized in his ministry. Sometimes when you read the gospel record, you might get the impression just a hodgepodge. No, no. Jesus had a specific plan to his ministry, and no one could change him from that. And when you see how the ministry unfolded during the three and a half years of his public ministry, you will see how incredibly organized was Jesus in his overall ministry.
So as you were writing, did you have in mind the audience that would be reading this book?
Yeah, I like to think that anyone could read it and be blessed by it, because it is a light commentary, and everything is explained. There's nothing in the ministry of Jesus that I don't make an effort to explain. But I would like to think that it would appeal most to those that are somewhat unfamiliar with the gospel record, those who might be, you know, scholars of the life of Jesus. Hopefully it could bless them too, but it was particularly geared for those who may be less involved in the knowledge of Jesus' ministry.
Now, I know we touched on, you know, what you have learned personally, but what did you learn factually that maybe had been said in other commentaries that you maybe had a change of view from what was traditionally said? Were there any of those discoveries in your research?
Actually, the opposite was true. The traditional view of the ministry of Jesus, the one that I personally subscribed to, was just verified over and over and over again. I found, as I mentioned, some new things that I didn't know or understand deeply before. But all of those things actually added to the traditional view. I didn't discover anything. Absolutely nothing in the study of the four Gospels that left me scratching my head and said, wow, I don't know how to handle that. Nothing at all.
So why are there four Gospels? Why does it have to be recounted four times in the Bible?
My guess is, we don't really know. My guess is that when the first one came out, and generally speaking, they think it was Mark's Gospels first. Anyway, when someone else like Matthew or Luke came along, they felt that they were addressing a different audience, or there were certain things left out that they wanted to include. John's gospel is totally different. Everything in the book of John, everything, is not mentioned in the other three. Now, it might be the same stories, but the details are different. Mm. So John added something. My own personal theory is that when John was ready to die, the church said, man, you need to put some of this stuff down on paper before you go. And so John's book amplifies the ministry of Jesus. And I might add, John's gospel record is by far the strongest dealing with the divinity of Jesus. Mm. And that was the fact that he was the Messiah and the Son of God.
You know, you're sitting there one day and then you just think, oh, I'm going to write a book that's going to be 875 pages. What prompted you to start this project?
Well, I'm a pastor. I preach sermons. I enjoy preaching the ministry of Jesus. So I did it for personal enrichment. I wanted a text. I have commentaries at home, but if I'm looking up Matthew, then I got to flip over to Mark and Luke or whatever, and I get tired of all that flipping. So what I decided to do, it'd be nice to have it all in one setting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I really put it together for my own benefit, for my own enrichment, for my preaching. But as time went on, I began to realize, hey, I've got something significant here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I one day just purely coincidentally, I received an advertisement in the mail from a publishing house that was interested in doing unpublished authors. So I said, why not? So I went through the process, and the more I worked on it, the bigger the book became. I never thought it would be nearly 900 pages. It was a surprise. And even in that case, we had to make the print a little bit smaller to get it in under 900 pages.
You know, it's those kinds of experiences when we look back and we know it's been God's providence and divinely led. A mere mortal could not do this. Tell me a little bit about the components. You have an index, you have the actual body. Tell me about all the components.
Okay, let me really mention how easy it is to find your way around. When you say a text is found in Matthew 25, you turn to Matthew 25. But if it's a harmony with the other, what text do you use? So what I have here is that I put it together in chapter and verse. There are 18 chapters in the book. And so it's put together just like a regular Bible. And it's called the Harmony, which is like the fifth version. I have an index in the back, the scriptural index, and also the footnotes on every page. And very easy to find your way from the regular Bible mm-hmm. to the Harmony, and from the Harmony back to the regular Bible. It's as easy as can be. So this was a huge thing
mm-hmm.
to make it easy to find your way around it. In fact, I can't imagine how much easier I could have made it. There's also another index that's on subjects, and then there's also an index that deals with the whole thing on a timeline, chronological. Altogether, it's 150 pages of indexes to enrich the use of the book. In addition to that, I have some cross-references. Some of them are Old Testament references, well over 1,000 of those, somewhat like the marginal readings in a regular Bible. Not as complete, but it's pretty good. Then when I put the book together, I did not explain within the text of the book why I made a certain decision on something. So sometimes at the end of chapters, I have supplementary notes where I explain why I made certain decisions the way I did. But basically, the book reads as a biography. The extra explanatory notes are indented so you can distinguish between what is the actual text and what is that I've added beyond the embedded comments throughout the book. I have an introduction that explains the details of how I put the book together. But to me, the most exciting thing is it's on a chronological timeline. So you know exactly what every event was, time-wise, and how it related to everything else. So you know where you are at any point in Jesus' ministry. And that I think is significant.
That's fantastic. Well, we have to take a break right here, but when we come back, we'll share with the audience where they can obtain this book. And also, I want to ask you about your favorite version of the Bible. We'll be right back.
There was a man that was trying to cross a frozen river in the Yukon one day. When suddenly cracked, the ice gave way and his body slipped into the cold stream. The current quickly washed him under the ice, and when he tried to surface, he was trapped. He could look up through the ice, but he couldn't get through to the air that he needed so desperately. Hi, I'm Paul Tooley, and I'd like to share an education moment with you. It would be really ludicrous of me to sit down and look through the ice at that man and try to discuss geometry or algebra with him. And even if I freed him from the frozen river, I still couldn't discuss algebra with him or Plato or the finer points of British literature. That's because he would need food, clothing, and shelter and warmth. Many school children in our schools today just are not ready to learn because, like that man under the frozen river, their basic needs are not being met, such as love and security. And without these, they are just not ready to be educated.
This Education Moment has been brought to you by EducationCurrents.com. That's EducationCurrents.com.
Welcome back. I'm talking with Elder Bradley Galambos. And
You don't need to call me Elder. Makes me feel old.
I'm talking with Pastor Bradley
better.
Galambos.
Yeah.
And I'm holding in my hand A Harmony of the Gospels, the story of the Messiah. It's an expanded, interpretive paraphrase of the chronological harmony of the four Gospels with cross-references, supplementary notes, and indexes. And I promised our listeners that you'd share where they can obtain this book.
Well, it was originally published in Author House out of Indiana. And so you go Author House. That's one word, Author House. .com, and then check on, you know, finding a book there and put my name in or the name of the book.
Can I just put Galambos,
G-A-L-A-M-B-O-S? That's correct. Galambos. It's the only one there, so should be easy to find. But also part of the entire package that I got from Author House. You can buy it at any of the big bookstores, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, just like you would buy anything else. And some of them may do a little bit better deal than the others.
Yeah, just watch for free shipping.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it's a heavy book.
Yeah, it's a heavy book.
It's definitely substantial.
We don't have it for sale in any of the religious bookstores, but it can be purchased, you know, through over the internet through any of your major booksellers.
Now, we were talking, you mentioned the regular Bible. Do you have a favorite version of the Bible that you used predominantly throughout the book?
Well, what I did was use a number of different translations. I have a book called 26 Translations, and they picked the best translation from every single verse. So I used that as a reference book. I also know a little bit of Greek, so that helped in putting it together. I sought a study in some of the commentaries. But the most of the regular books that I use in terms of the Bible was the New American Standard. I've been preaching from the New American Standard for 30-some years. It is by far the most literal translation. It doesn't read with some of the excitement of the other translations, but it's very, very literal. And so I'm a big proponent of the New American Standard.
I don't know if we went into any detail about the different controversies, but taking us back to that time and then relating it to today's controversies, how can we apply what Jesus was going through to our own lives?
I believe that what he had to say, even though it was 2,000 years ago, has a very practical application. The Sermon on the Mount, which is chapter 5 in the book, I consider one of the most important chapters that I put together. I believe that the Sermon on the Mount describes the ministry of Jesus in more detail than any other part of his ministry in terms of what his philosophy was. And he refers to different parts of the Sermon on the Mount many, many times throughout the rest of his ministry. There's just so many references, direct and indirect, to the Sermon on the Mount. He repeats himself. And so the ministry of Jesus is best described by the Sermon on the Mount. And he follows a very logical, very detailed, sensible, point-by-point description of his understanding of the true gospel message. The point I would make is, having said all that, the practicality of that sermon is even more valuable than it was 2,000 years ago.
It's so easy for us to sit here and go, we know the text, Jesus suffered, you know, in all ways, like in all the ways that we are suffering. And we're going, yeah, right. We're suffering. We're economically challenged. Our children aren't following the rules. We're, you know, faced with separation and death. Jesus suffered in that way too? I mean,
well, it's very interesting to note from my viewpoint that Jesus not only was divine, but he was human. And his humanity shows up a number of times in the gospel record. to me, the most dramatic is that Jesus did not want to suffer. Humanly speaking, he shrunk from it. And beginning with the first time he has an encounter with the devil in the wilderness, one of the three temptations that he has is, don't suffer. I have a plan, the devil said, that you can save the world without suffering. And in order for that temptation to be effective, even though it didn't work, but in order for that temptation to at least potentially be effective, it would be something that Jesus would want to shrink from. We have another case where much later in his ministry, Jesus talks about his suffering. And Peter said, oh, no, you can't suffer. And Jesus said, get thee behind me, Satan. Now, why would he say that unless it was a true temptation for him to shrink from the human suffering of that 15-hour period, not only when he suffered physically, but he suffered emotionally and spiritually, being separated from God as the sin bearer. This is somebody who intimately knew God, who had a relationship with God beyond any description, his father. And yet, the thought of losing that was downright scary to Jesus. I actually would use that word. And you see Jesus shrinking from it. And the three prayers in the Garden of Gethsemane. If it be possible, let this cup pass from me. What's he saying that for? Again, we see that humanity of Jesus playing such a role. Sometimes you see Jesus above and beyond it all. And other times you see him suffering as we suffer. He wasn't rich. We see much evidence of that. He had no place to live on a regular basis. He had to walk everywhere he went, constantly harassed by people who were seeking to kill him. And then he was just surrounded by sick people all the time wanting to be healed. In fact, there's one example where it says they were actually tripping over one another to get to see Jesus. Can you imagine bearing that, humanly speaking? His family never understood his complete ministry, including his mother. So he had to carry that burden. His disciples were constantly flaking out on him, causing trouble, fighting among themselves. And that had to affect Jesus in a dramatic way, not simply as God, but also as a human being. You see, we believe from the gospel record, Jesus is fully human and fully divine. And it's called the incarnation. It's something that's very unique. And everything that you see in the gospel record confirms that. When I put this book together, I did not study the gospel records in a critical way. I accept them as the true gospel record. Now, while there are discrepancies between the different gospel records, they're a matter of detail and not theology.
Well, we've come to the end of our time, and I thank you so much for talking to us. And I'd like to recommend the book, A Harmony of the Gospels, The Story of the Messiah by Bradley Glambos. You can obtain it at authorhouse.com. It's all one word. Or you can go to Amazon or Borders. Any of those also carry it. And with that, we'll say goodbye. Have a good day. God bless.
You have been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.